Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, tell me, Paul, who doesn't love fairy tales?
Nobody I know.
I know. Today, Terry Hershey and I will engage in yet another very impromptu discussion. This time we plan to dive into what I may say are the treacherous waters of fairy tales, which offered hope for overcoming the hardships and trials that come with real life. And the messages from fairy tales continue to influence the way so many of us project and plan our futures. But not all fairy tales ended the way Walt Disney production portrayed them, did they? Cinderella, Snow White, and Little Mermaid originally had rather grim endings. And speaking of grim, just think of the Brothers Grimm. In fact, did you know their fairy tales were not even intended for children? They were stories that were quite adult. But today, we are still in our optimistic moments, prone to compose stories of a particularly hopeful future. While I personally think this is a good idea, there still is a question. Are personal fairy tales helpful? Let's see what my friend Terry Hershey has to say about that, and get show on the road. Yo, Hirsch.
Charles, how are you?
I am baffled and befuddled. And in my preparation for this, I got so into fairy tales that I just got so confused that I just said, forget it. I got a couple opening questions, and then you and I are just going to chat like we normally chat over the phone.
That's good, because I didn't know what the topic was today anyway. So. But, hey, the uninformed and yet the curious. This is the crucial difference.
I love that, the uninformed but the curious. You know, I just took a character assessment. You know me and assessments, and I just took an assessment. And this only says your positive traits, and one of my top five character traits was curiosity. And I said, man, they nailed me on that one.
Yeah, no, that's actually true about you, and I think that's great. Yeah, I it's always fun when you take one of those tests, and then at the end it just says, would you please take this again, and it'd be better if you had something to drink first.
It'd be helpful if you were truthful. You know what's really nice about this one that I took, and it's called VA Character Traits or something like that. It's free. I'd have to find it out. Perhaps I'll put it on the show notes. It's really, really good, and it says, and the instruction is, answer these questions as you feel today. That is so much simpler than answer these questions as you normally feel in your normal day. You know, it's just, no, what are you feeling right now? I don't care what you felt yesterday or tomorrow. What do you feel right
now? Yeah, I like that. I like that about the more truthful thing. I think back to your fairy tale assumption is sometimes we feel like we have to make an ending, and we're always in trouble if we add the word should to any sentence. In other words, this is what it should be like. And a lot of people do the same thing when they take tests, how it should turn out. In other words, we're afraid that there's any kind of sufficiency in what is.
I so agree with you. And is it afraid because fear because of shame or incompetence or some kind of respect or adulation? What do you think the root of that is?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we've talked about this kind of thing a lot. I mean, there's a variety of reasons for it. I mean, to try to tie it into the fairy tale thing, and I, you know, fairy tales is just a nice language. I don't think people should get too trip over themselves with it. But I mean, I was raised in a very religious environment, and the way I was raised, there were certain things you had to believe about God and life and the world, and none of these had to do with anything we knew existed, but they were in our belief system, right?
Yeah, in what we were told our belief system is.
Correct. And so we adapted them. But sadly, what we did is we connected our well-being to that. The cart before the horse. In other words, I didn't see any sort of connection to, in this case, this is God talk stuff, but I didn't see any sort of connection to to God, in other words, mentally, how I process that. To me, being an authentic, wholehearted, sufficient person. I didn't start there. I started with the fact that I was insufficient, and therefore I had to have a fairy tale slash belief system that somehow helped me out.
But, you know, get that. I could discuss that in depth, which I hope we come back to, but I want to ask the question. There is something helpful to such a belief system, not maybe a strict and rigid belief system, but certainly values. You know, you're talking about our core beliefs. There is something very important to having maybe an agile belief system, don't you think?
Yeah, agile is a good word to say it. The belief system that's not at war with me being an authentic person.
Yeah. And you know, the way I'm defining authentic these days is alignment and integrity to yourself.
Correct. And I love the fact that, see, because all of these things, what it boils down to, which goes even to, even go back to your thing about, what's the topic today? Oh, fairy tales. Fairy tales. Going back to fairy tales, the Disney stuff. I mean, the ones that really work, and many of them do, the ones that work are the ones that are predicated on values that are being elevated, which is what you just did. You started with two values. Authentic and alignment. I forget what the exact word, but that's just,
yeah.
You start there. You don't start the other way around. In other words, the story doesn't make the values. The values help you see the story.
Boy, that's really helpful, Terry. I like that because if we make fairy tales not about witches and brews and apples and queens, we make them that those are just means to tell a story of values, to tell a story.
Yeah, because
of something
you go to any culture in the world, and they're going to have stories that they tell. And you know this from traveling to Uganda. The stories are not even close to the same stories we tell. However, you know from a fact that many places the values are still the same ones that are honored at the core of where authenticity means something.
You know where I really saw that? I saw that, and listeners, I just want you to know I'm gonna do an aside here. This is a conversation with Terry and I. This is, you know, so it's going to, for us, very fun places, and I hope you enjoy the journey. So let's go back on cultures. And you know where I noticed the values, ancient values that reverberated today was when I visited the Mayan culture, and I went to Machu Picchu a couple of years ago, and there is a belief system. Now, they're Christian country, but not in, you know, our language of Christian country, but there is a thing called Pachamama, and Pachamama has to do with there are three elements in the world. There is the sky, there is the earth, and there's the below the earth. And there's life in each place, and there's honor given to each territory. And that is still values today in the Peruvian society of, you know, people who are in the not necessarily the educated and elite, but the average day-to-day people. And the values that are thousand-year-old values are still values today, and I was so moved by that.
What you have is a place where you honor values about what it means to be fully human, fully alive, fully authentic, and fully transparent in that way. And what does it mean to honor that humanity? And so there are values that come with that, whether it be, you know, compassion, empathy, etc. And make your list. Authenticity, whatever your list is there. But it doesn't vary much from culture to culture in terms of being fully human and fully alive. And what's remarkable is the kind of stories we tell to help that. What was interesting to me is that many of the stories that were told to me, and it's not that I'm saying that the people who are a part of that faith are in the, quote, wrong faith. I'm saying that many of those, quote, fairy tales told to me did not help replenish those values.
I know. I have a friend that came from your tradition that was a minister of a very large church, and he said that he found out that many of the things that he could not do were his goals in life. And so you can't dance, you can't drink. And he was thinking, that's what I want to do. So they were.
Yeah,
ours
was you can't dance or drink, and you can't even date women who do that. So that was hard.
Oh, you can't date women that do that either?
Dance or drink. That's what you wanted. You wanted at least to have a woman who danced and drank.
There we go back again to blaming the woman. So Adam and Eve, huh? So Adam, I'm clean, man. I just ate because a woman gave it to me. I danced because she took me out on the floor. I told her I didn't want to do it.
That's so good.
But I like the idea of combining these. I think you really hit on something, because the fairy tale really does tell a story, a sort of a story that ingratiates us to our value system and makes our value system even more real. What I want to talk about are the fairy tales that we create for the future. We have fairy tales for our values, but what about the fairy tales? You know, you and I were talking last week, and we were talking about the elections and how, you know, for some people they were fairy tales come true, and for others they were nightmares. And, you know, and that's very sad to me. But they're based on sort of a value-driven fairy tale, if I could use that word, of what the future might look like, of what an Orwellian or Huxleyan future might look like. And so what do you think of creating these optimistic futures for ourselves that we're calling fairy tales that may actually come true? But do you think it's important to create some sort of paradigm for the future?
Wow. That okay. So that's a lot of questions there.
Well, we're just talking, man.
And as soon as you said the word election, then I had to take a drink. So mostly because I was stunned at how it derailed us, but as a country, in a strange way. But that's an aside. I want to put that aside, because one of the storytelling things that's going on with relative to that is that we're making our stories so that somehow the people who are not us are not connected to the story. So that's a strange deal.
It's intentionally alienating.
Correct. Yeah. In other words, that this story is my story and you can't be a part of it. And in a way, it was like the way I grew up. I mean, everyone else was going to hell, so they couldn't even understand my story.
Right.
And it was my story, it wasn't their story, and you know how they are.
Which, by the way, as an aside, makes your story even stronger, makes your position even stronger. You're more correct. You're more in the elite with your story, because the others don't believe as you believe.
Yeah, but here's the irony with that, Charlie, is that what I've learned from that is I said they didn't believe simply because I said they didn't believe. I never had a conversation with them. I never asked them. We never talked about the values underneath it all. They just didn't use the same words I use. So therefore, I dismissed them.
That's a scary thought in our state of free speech and trying to, I believe, in the old day politician of compromise and crossing the aisle and working together, arguing all day and then drinking together at night. Once you have where words become so adversarial that no dialogue.
Well, they're weaponized. Yeah, they're weaponized.
Weaponized. And, great, yeah. Great. Is that a verb? Yes, I think it is.
Yeah, it is a verb. Weaponized. And that's when you do that. I think, see, one of the things that I want, quote, fairy tales to do, because I write fairy tales every, I write them every day with something called Sabbath Moment, but I write a big one every Monday.
You do.
I write them, and they're going to be stories, but every one of the stories, and this is what I have to do when I'm writing them, is a reinforcement of the values underneath them.
In your language, they are authentic to your soul, to your inner being, to who you are.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're telling.
But it's not just being authentic to me per se. For example, I actually say this, and you know this from working with companies where you do mission statements too. But I say this in every Sabbath moment. I say, I need you to know, I'm writing this. In other words, I could say this fairy tale, but I'm writing this Sabbath moment. I'm writing this fairy tale because I want to live with a soft heart. I want to create a place for sanctuary, empathy, inclusion, compassion, and kindness. And I want to make the world that way.
And who doesn't want to live in that world?
And so my point is, and the irony is, and that's because, and to your point is, there are many, many people on both sides of the, quote, political aisle who read it. But the political question is never even, quote, addressed, which is good.
Because it is, you know, back to your verb, the political question is a weaponized question. It automatically takes sides. I was just listening to a song by David Wilcox that you and I both love his music, and he talks about there is no taking sides when the battle lines disappear. If we could get the battle lines to disappear, then there is no taking sides. There is only Sabbath, inclusion, grace,
right.
Love.
Yeah.
Because it's not about positions. It's about a value that is so much greater than my position, my political party, or my particular persuasion.
Yeah, and so you're, and I want to add to that too. And what we have to be honest about is that all those things that I write about, the compassion, inclusion, this is not a fairy tale where you have the happy ending. No, it's like you talked about earlier. There's darkness there. In other words, to live that way is not easy or fun sometimes. It doesn't really matter if it's easy, it's still worth it.
If it's not easy or fun, what makes it worthy of doing? Because we are in the culture of easy and fun.
Then I would ask you, why are you married?
and I would respond, because I've watched you and I've seen the results.
because there's a greater value at stake in the fairy tale is would be your answer.
And when that fairy tale is in concert with, I'm going to say, with the values that you hold dear, let me take a step back from that and ask you, how many people do you personally know that have identified or truly worked to articulate what their personal values are?
It's not very high.
It's important, or do you think that's just an intellectual sort of bunch of gobbledygook?
Well, it's not intellectual, and I would also say that many people would be willing to name certain things too, but very often we don't put words to what that means. In other words, we don't put stories to it. When you walk someone through that, then it makes extraordinary sense. I mean, even like, for example, Veterans Day is a remarkable reminder about the kind of story that many people in our country have gone through to be in service. And when they come back from serving, they have stories that ground them. And it's very hard for that to be translated to people who have never been there.
Did you read that story, that letter in You Turned Me On to Axios News? And I read that daily.
Yeah.
Did you read that letter from the World War II combat, writing to his son that he's never met. Never met.
Oh no! That would be
Oh my goodness! You read that, Paul? It's so powerful, and it's all values oriented, and it's just what he's trying to encourage his son to do, and he's writing this from the battlefield, and it was it's an actual letter that's typed on old yellowed paper and.
I'll find that because we need more and more quote stories / fairy tales like that. I mean, that's a fairy tale, and that's not a detrimental statement of that. And a fairy tale is simply a way to tell a story that has an ending, or a possible ending.
A possible and may I use the adjective a possible optimistic ending.
Because
if we're pessimistic, then we become nihilistic, and then the philosophy of pessimism, and who cares about life? It's meaningless. It doesn't matter what you do unless there's hope, optimism, and love.
To that point is, if we have to start with the premise that life matters, authentic, real, transparent life matters. So.
And that causes, and that calls for, requires us to do something that is very difficult in our culture today, and that is thinking, actually spending time and thinking about it. Now, I want to go back to something you said that I really resonated with, and that was talking about essentially everyone has values. It's just that they've not been named. They've not been, had the opportunity or taken the time or saw the reason to name them. However, when you name your values, there's an advantage and a disadvantage. There's an advantage of you clearly see what you want to live up to and how you want to be. The disadvantage is it can make you narrow-minded and not open-minded to new values that you haven't thought of yet. So there's two sides, but I do think, to the degree that it's possible, I would encourage everybody listening to sort of identify your values. You know, we have a podcast on noble aims where I identified four noble aims for my life, and I just happened to do it on air. I hadn't really thought a whole lot about it, but they have become my four go-tos in life. And they are indeed noble aims that are ripe with values.
Yeah, noble aim is good. And I do that too when I'm writing. I take whatever I'm writing / preaching / talking about, I have to look at it through the lens of what those are, those values. And that's a comeuppance, because you realize we come up short, and I have to say, okay, that doesn't pass the muster.
Yes, and that is, but in my mind, that's a healthy thing, sort of.
Yes, in fact, healthy. That's the irony about having when we foreclose on all of this, we're nuts. That was the thing about the way I was raised, is you foreclosed on it. No one was. I had a little memory thing that I was writing in something from one of my Sabbath moments about going to a church to lecture, and a woman says, what are you going to be talking about? And I said, well, my title is Chocolate and God and the Dance of Life. And this woman said, but you're not even Catholic. And I said, yeah, but I feel guilt. I feel guilt a lot. Does that count?
That is great.
And then she said, but I mean, how can you talk about these things if you're not a part of the church? And so that's that whole thing about values, that the foreclosure on it. In other words, that they have to be this way, and it's my way or the highway. Once you foreclose on it, the wonderful thing about values is always being humble, the humility of learning to be more compassionate, more inclusive, more authentic, more transparent, all of these things.
I want to take a break right there because that is powerful. I want everybody to think about that, about us becoming more rather than foreclosing on what we primarily believed. So let's take a quick break and we're going to come right back. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie and with my dear friend Terry Hershey, and we are talking about values in the form of story, and we're calling them chasing fairy tales, but not in a negative way that a fairy tale is a negative thing, as Terry has so aptly brought to our mind. Fairy tale is a beautiful story of values and how we can live according to our values, and why fairy tales stay with us so long is because they're inherently valuable. Now, I want to bring up, you talked about last time, you were just before the break, you were talking about foreclosing on predetermined values, or especially values taught to us by outside authority. You know, religion falls really guilty in there, but so does certain political beliefs, you know, the hippies and communes and all the values they tried to instill, to their, not instill, but force upon their children. It seems to be doomed to parenthood, but we can't foreclose on those. And so I have been working on sort of a not a timeline, but a sort of a continuum of three features that are important in my life. And I have this, you know, as I told you, I took that instrument that defined one of my characteristics was curiosity. Another is love of learning. I love to learn new things as a curious person. I love to learn new things. And so I put this sort of continuum together that my life is a process of learning, unlearning, and then relearning. That there needs that I must be continually in that process. When I stay stuck in learning, then I'm stuck in life, and I'm stuck of advancement and improvement and enrichment. But when I'm unlearning some things, I'm not just adding to things. There's some things I need to deconstruct because they were constructed 30 years ago for my state where I was 30 years ago. And 30 to 40 years later, I'm a different person. And so I need to unlearn that so I can relearn new values, new ideas, new ways of doing life that impact my culture today.
Yeah. I mean, they served you then.
What do you think about that structure, about learning, unlearning, and relearning?
I wholeheartedly agree with it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, because my first question with anything I do is, in what way may I be wrong? In what ways can I see this differently? Can I see this holistically? Can I see this from another vantage point?
And we need to stretch beyond our comfort zone to find that out, don't we? Because if we only, like in reading, if we only read, you know, if you're a person that leans to the left and you only read the New Yorker or the Atlantic, all you're doing is reading journals that support your belief, where it's helpful to read others. Like, as you know, I tend to be a little bit more on the right. I'm certainly not radical right. I'm center right. You told me the good writing of the Atlantic, which is very far left in my opinion, but it's extraordinary writing. I mean, just the quality, the editorial and linguistic quality of that work is so brilliant that I learn from that, and it's important for me to read that, whether I agree or disagree, that it is important to have that information inside of me, that it helps my determination of my, let's go back to values, of my values, that I try to read widely enough to challenge my own thought.
I think one of the values of having me in your life is to tell you when you're wrong, Charlie.
Well, you know, oddly enough, that you probably meant that humorously, or maybe not, but that is true. I think you bring something to my life because, you know, we've never really aired this, but you are very far left and I'm center right. I'm not very far right. There's a lot of things on the left that I am, but
I mean, what's fascinating about our conversations is so many of the things. I mean, if you talk about, because a lot of that has to do with political discussion, but political discussion, one of it's on the level of policy and policy making. Well, if you can't have some place where you fight with each other in policy making and not beat each other up, something's wrong. Because there's got to be something deeper than that at the core, which is about values. And both of us, the best part about being friends, both of us, the whole point about being friends is you help each other with where their blind spots are, where our blind spots are relative to how our values are reinforced. And what we do to either encourage them or what we do to pretend, one of those two.
Yeah. That is an importance of friendship, of that you can, you know, I have a couple friends like that that are in the political scene. We differ ideologically, but we can have compelling conversation, and we can have conversations that can be heated and ripe with feeling, but it doesn't damage the relationship. You know, it's that, you know, like in the old days, like in the Lyndon Johnson days and the early days of Joe Biden, back in old politics where they would argue vehemently all day and then go to the same bar, except Biden doesn't drink, but they would go to the same bar and have drinks and just, you know, talk about life, the universe and everything. And if only we could return to those kind of days where we could have cross-aisle talking and people could differ ideologically but have the value of the richness of what democracy or a republic, however we want to put this, the value that we could see how similar we are in our differences.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, the list of the values that I read about Sabbath Moment is anybody who's going to have a conversation with me knows that I'm going to be working toward those values. And there's not one of those values that belong to one side of the court aisle. There's not one of those values that belong to.
No, tell them again, Terry, so we have them, because they're really such good values. The ones you
can remember. Compassion, empathy, inclusion, sanctuary. I'm doing them from memory now.
Well, those are pretty darn good right there. I could see there's every one of those. There's not one of those I would take issue with. Not only would I not take issue with, I could form behavior around those, that those are solid behaviors.
Now, that's a good sentence, form behavior around, because that the key is with any story, back to the fairy tale thing, if I preach a sermon, I'm going to tell stories. And this goes back to the Gospels and Jesus. Jesus told stories. He didn't tell stories just so we could say those are nice stories. Every story encouraged us to form behavior. Everyone.
That is an essential point, because values without behavior is, putting it crassly, is bullshit. You know, it means nothing. If you don't have behaviors associated with your values, and behaviors that are consistent with your values, then it's just talk. It doesn't mean anything.
The stories, and the people say, isn't that a nice story? No. It's not just a nice story. Now, if this is a good fairy tale, you have a choice.
Yes, you have a choice. And that is the beauty of the gospel story, is it not? It is you have a choice, and there is an action. And the action ultimately and resolutely comes down to one thing. You know, in the traditions that I'm reading now, it comes down to one thing, and it comes down to love. And it comes down to that is the nature of the Creator, that is the ontological, essential nature of the Creator is love. And unless we are living, accepting, breathing, doing love, we are out of concert with the way we are created. And that absolutely requires behavior. It's not just talk about it.
And you would also argue that love is something that's already existing at the core of every one of us, but gets buried for many, many reasons. And so the story invites it.
That's a great point, because we have what we call in my tradition, we call the false self, which is the self that is so insecure. You know, it's not a bad self. It's an insecure self. It's an insecure self that needs, I put the three P's, possession, prestige, and power. And those are what sort of appease my insecurity. And every one of those, possessions, prestige, and power, are anti-love. Every one of those. And so those are our natural go-tos, and we have to get away from that to where we are thinking not what we are getting, but what we are giving. And the beauty of love, as I sort of go off on a little diversion here, the beauty of love, it is self-fulfilling. The more you love, the more love you have inside of you. And the only way to prevent love from dwelling up inside of you is to fail to give it away. You fail to give it away, it quits coming.
Yeah, which takes us back to the fairy tale thing and the story. And that's why a really profound fairy tale at its core is neither a test nor a contest nor an assignment. It's not a beauty pageant. It's an affirmation of what is already there. And it does exactly what you just said. It invites you to that.
I like that a fairy tale is an invitation. So let's wrap this up and let's talk about, and this will be the shortest podcast I think we've ever done, and it's still good length. But let's wrap this up and I want to have a discussion about what kinds of fairy tales in the tumultuous understatement society that we live in now, what kinds of fairy tales can help us in our divisiveness, in our hope, you know, in our need to do what I so value as love? What kinds of fairy tales can we create, Terry?
If you're talking about stories from our past, I mean, I'm going to take stories like The Velveteen Rabbit and The Little Prince and stories Mr. Rogers has told. Because stories are basically just a way for you to put yourself in one of the characters. That's what it is. In other words, it's not simply just a declaration, go love someone. In other words, they tell you a story with characters, and you say, as you see that story, I can be one of those characters. That's the power.
I can identify Powers. With that.
Yeah, I can identify with that character, or I want to be that character. That's the character I want to be.
Yeah, there's something inside of me telling me I need to be that. I would love to be that. I don't necessarily need to be that, but I would.
Yeah, and or I am that, but I didn't give myself permission to be, or I didn't give myself credit.
I agree. You know what story really sings to me a lot? And you tell it every time you speak just about. And that's the story of you and your grandmother on the swing.
Oh, yeah. It's a great story.
Oh, it's a great story. It's such a great story of grace. Why don't you wrap us up with that story? I don't know that all of our listeners have heard that story, and it's a very endearing and true story that is a story of grace and love.
My grandmother, when she was in the last years of her life, lived in northern Florida with my grandfather, a town called Chiefland, and my grandmother had a porch swing, which is a very Floridian thing. But my grandmother would spend time every day on her porch swing, and she liked to sit and swing, and she would hum old church hymns like Rock of Ages, Cleft for Me. And I remember visiting her when I was a young adult. I was a pastor when I was young, but I would go back to Florida.
What is young, Terry, just so I get an idea of what young is?
26, 27.
Oh, okay, so you were old.
Yeah, yeah. But I would visit her from my early 20s on up through my late 20s. And whenever I visit her, she would always ask me to sit with her on the swing for a spell. That's what you say in Florida, for a spell. And as we sat on the swing, she would always pat my leg and call me darling. And the Powers, I remember her because on her head she had a white scarf because of chemotherapy's unrelenting march in her life. And the power of the swing is that every time I remember visiting her, I never had to prove myself or be somebody I was not. I never had to impress or perform. I simply got to be just Terry. So one of the things I look for in places like that, in stories that affirm the sufficiency that is in me, that invite me to those very values I say I want to live, empathy, inclusion, compassion, is to tell me where the porch swing is. So
that is such a powerful story, and perhaps because I know some backstory, and I know those were the years in your life you were Terry Hershey, capital letters and neon lights, that everybody was following Terry Hershey. Not that they don't follow you today, but I mean, you were a young man, way too young for that kind of power. And there had to be just tremendous insecurity, tremendous questions about who you are. Do people like you? Did you do a good speech? And you found the wonder of a grandmother that says, that didn't even mention it. Those are non-events in your life. The event in your life is you are here and you are loved, darling.
And yeah, that's the truth. That'd be a great book title. The event in your life, you were here and you were loved.
Darling.
Yeah, darling.
Hey, Hersh. Thanks so much, man. It is it's always good to make public our private conversations.
Yep. Good day, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, bud. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. And please be sure to check us out at our website. And also tell your friends about us as Terry hangs up. Tell your friends about us that Terry will not hang up on you if you happen to call him. And check us out at the next chapter.life, L-I-F-E. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.